Hey out there, everybody. Movie Geeks United, another exciting week for you. I'm Jamie. Jerry's here with me. Dean will be sitting tonight's episode out because we've had some switchboard issues this evening. It's actually been a little while since. Remember, there was a period of time where every show we had like technical snafus and stuff.
But, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But hey, I got to tell you, last night mm-hmm. I found myself watching something on Lifetime.
Oh, God.
Network. They made a TV movie out of the Brittany Murphy story.
Oh, that was last night?
Yes. So
oh, wow.
I watched it, and I'll tell you, it fascinated me because it has that Lifetime melodrama, low budget, very rushed production kind of feel to it. But there
mm-hmm.
are scenes in the movie, if that's what you want to call it. The moments in a scene, in a single scene that work really well, and then the very next second, it'll be terrible. Like, it keeps fluctuating back and forth, and it's the most fascinating thing to watch. But
wow.
The one thing that I was most kind of terrified by, guess who plays Brittany Murphy's mother in the movie?
I don't know. I want to know. Hunter Tylo.
Sherilyn Fenn. And so
Wait. All right, just say that very clearly for the audience at home now.
Sherilyn Fenn. We are that old that Sherilyn Fenn is playing her mother. Yeah.
Oh my God, I want to go commit suicide now. Oh my God.
She's really good in it. And like everything that's good about it is pretty much belongs to her. I mean, she gets a real...
Really?
Yeah, she gets a real nice camaraderie going with the lead actress. I mean, nobody's embarrassing in it. Even a potentially embarrassing performance, which would have been the guy that plays Ashton Kutcher, it's a little bit embarrassing, but you look at the guy and you think, no, I mean, he's doing about as good a job as you could possibly imagine someone playing Ashton Kutcher doing, you know?
Probably better than Ashton Kutcher, I mean, you know? So
it was really an interesting movie, and you know it builds and builds. The problem is that no one quite knows the official story of the ending. I mean, there's still questions about her death. So at the very end, it feels like it just rushes right past it. Like we don't know what to make of how she died, so let's rush right past this. And it is odd because she died of acute pneumonia and an iron deficiency was the cause of her death.
Right, right.
Five months later, her husband died of the exact same thing.
Oh, okay. How that was not that long ago, though. I mean, that's like 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Whose life is begging for a Lifetime movie that hasn't been done yet?
That's a good question because I know now. It's funny you bring up Lifetime because Lifetime is really trying to, they have this. Is Lifetime the one doing the Saved by the Bell movie?
Yeah, they already aired that. Yes.
Oh, that aired? I missed that. Yes. Okay. And they want to do a movie based, a TV series based on Damien Thorne, like a weekly series based on the character.
Yeah. That which was the oddest thing, because I'm looking at it and it's like, they're going to make The Omen into a TV series. And then I looked at it and said, premiering on Lifetime. I'm like, what? Like, never was there Stranger Bedfellows.
Well, let's take a look. I'm still wrestling with that, and I have so many issues with that, but I'll probably watch it.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I liked Brittany Murphy. I thought she was so funny and so good. And I'm still like kind of, I have to like do a double take because she's dead. It's still in my mind, still kind of like a weird thing. But as far as who else they could do I don't know. You'll have to refresh my memory. I honestly don't know who else they could. The guy from Jackass who died in the car accident, maybe. I mean...
Yeah, I guess.
You'll have to forgive me. I'm not trying to be flippant. I'm actually trying to be very honest here and very serious. I don't know.
This is the problem. Because them doing something like Brittany Murphy, The problem is it's so low budget that they can't afford to recreate scenes from the movie she was in. They can't have the rights to that. And so when you think about future topics for a Lifetime movie, you think, well, maybe Amy Winehouse, but they wouldn't be able to afford any of the music.
The music would destroy their budget for 5 years.
Yes, but it would have to be a figure like that, like in popular culture that younger women love, that actually suffered like some kind of trauma.
Can I give you a suggestion? Can I throw out a suggestion from the mid-90s?
Sure.
Savannah, the porn star who, you know, when she got into a car accident, her face was like destroyed. She pulled out a gun from her glove compartment and blew her brains out.
True that.
I did manage to see, you know, two movies on DVD this week, Enemy and Night Moves, and I did go to the theater to see The Last of Robin Hood, but as far as major releases this week, it was a dead week.
Enemy, that's the Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, it's a fascinating movie. Now, I have not seen The Double with Jesse Eisenberg, which is actually based on a real story. This one, Enemy, is actually based on the Jose Saramago story, and he wrote Blindness that they made into a movie a couple of years ago. This is crazy. This is an interesting movie. Melanie Laurent is in it. There's someone else in it, but it's a very small movie. I mean, it's just a couple of actors, and it's surreal, but it's fascinating. It is a fascinating little movie. But, you know, I can't really talk that much about it because it's not the kind of movie you just really have to watch it. It's sort of very, you know,
well,
his
new one looks really intriguing. His new
Nightcrawler.
One.
Oh, my God.
Looks almost like a twisted modern version of Network in a way.
That's a really awesome description of that. But I watched Night Moves last night. I think Dean had just seen that too, or he watched it a couple months ago, the Kelly Reichardt movie.
Right.
And I've had my fill of Dakota Fanning, I think, this year. Between that and The Last of Robin Hood, I've definitely had my fill of her. But that's an interesting movie about eco-terrorists who they want to blow up a dam and then the ramifications of that. Peter Sarsgaard is in it. James LaGrosse is in it. Do you remember him?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, no, but he was, you know, I mean, he was supposed to be the next big thing, and I think he has a small part in this. And I guess the movie to compare it to, because last year we also had that movie The East with Ellen Page,
right,
the other
right.
eco-terrorist. This is a little bit more interesting because this is more like more of the real deal, because that one, it turned out to be, how shall I say it? It wasn't like, you know, true believers. This is all true believers, and the ramification of when you go follow through with something. And it's a disturbing little movie. It's very good. I liked it a lot more than her last movie, Meek's Cutoff. I'm not sure I liked it more than Wendy and Lucy, but her movies are physically, you'll have to forgive me. I don't remember who the cinematographer was. Beautiful movies.
I know that Sam Levy was the DP on Wendy and Lucy, and he's the guy who did Francis Ha. He did. So he could have done
beautiful looking movie, though. That was the first thing that really stunned me. I'm watching this on my, you know, on TV, but still, I mean, it's like, wow, this is a really beautiful movie.
I'd be interested in seeing it. It seems like an interesting dynamic to have her direct a, you know, a quote unquote thriller, because all of her movies are slow burns, if they're burning at all.
This is still a slow. This is a slow burn. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
I mean, they're very observational. So I mean, it's almost like if Merchant Ivory tried to do a thriller. I don't know what that would be like.
No, that's a good analogy. No, I mean it's a very interesting film, and that's a very good exit. It's a very good analogy.
What would be a good Merchant Ivory thriller?
Oh God!
What would be a good Merchant Ivory thriller? Actually, the one that Peter Bogdanovich made, The Cat's Meow. I would equate that. Yeah, I would equate that with something that Merchant Ivory might do. You know, like with Chaplin and Hearst and all that kind of stuff and Ainz and all that. That's what that was about, right? Catch Me Out.
Yeah, no, no, yeah. I have a question. I want to bring up something because I brought this up last night on Facebook. Do you think Alan Rudolph will ever make anything again?
I don't know. You know, the only times that I see interviews with him is when he's talking about Altman. Because he started with him. I mean, Altman took him under his wing and gave him his first shot.
Yeah.
What was the last thing he made?
The last thing that there's a movie after, but the last thing that is The Secret Lives of Dennis. If you look on IMDb, that's the last movie. And that's a very good movie. I love that movie. It's a good movie.
And I remember the one he did in the 90s, and it was a big deal because it was the return of Julie Christie before she did
Afterglow. Afterglow, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one, too.
Guess what? This week, it's time for our Blu-ray. God, I'm talking like Sylvester the Cat or something. It's time for our Blu-ray review show.
Oh, cool.
And that means Adam Long is back with us.
Thank God.
Hello,
Adam
guys.
Adam Long, soon to be elected official.
Well, we're hoping. I don't know. We're doing everything we can over here.
Well, you know, Jerry and I spent the entire weekend handing out bumper stickers for you.
Oh,
I just want you
wow.
to know that.
I got run over by a car, but yeah, I did. Yeah, I mean.
Well, don't kill yourself. It's not worth that now. Come on
now,
sir.
Let me ask you a question, though. Let me ask you what. Because the impression I'm under from what you said the last time, or when you announced it, you're sort of unopposed in this. Is that, am I correct in that?
Well, what it is, it's an at-large seat, county commissioner, and what we have is there are two seats, basically, that are open, and there are only three candidates. I'm the only Democratic candidate running, and we
Thank
have two
God.
Republicans. Yeah, so basically, whoever gets the most, the two candidates with the most votes, basically, first and second place winner, I guess you would say, will fill those two spots. So that's how it works, from what I understand. So.
Mm-hmm.
So you could theoretically get a Republican and a Democrat. We could both get it, technically. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it all works out. But, yeah, I'm doing a lot of putting, you know, signs in people's yards. And we got some T-shirts yesterday. And they've got a fall festival going on here in the county in 2 weeks. And I'm going to have a booth out there, you know, doing all that stuff. So. So yeah, there's a lot of going
so
on.
So tell me, Adam, have you kissed a baby? Have you kissed a baby yet? I mean, that's the ultimate
Not
politician.
Not yet.
Have you punched the baby?
No, I haven't punched nor
like
have I.
Like in the campaign, like the campaign.
Yeah, not like in the campaign. No, no, we're not running that kind of campaign. But no,
thank
I
God,
not yet. But there may be some ample opportunities to do so in a couple of weeks. So we shall see. But you know, it's all new to me, and I was asked to do this. It wasn't my idea. They came after me, which I feel honored that they feel like I'm representative, or maybe that's scary, actually.
Adam, whatever the outcome,
yes.
At least it's a grand adventure. I mean, most of us will never be able to say that we've run for any kind of elected office. It's a great thing.
It is, and it's coming. It's interesting timing too, because I have. You know, I have a degree in broadcasting, and I have, as you guys probably have seen on Facebook, I have recently gotten back into the world of broadcasting. I'm now interning in our local PBS affiliate, too, trying to get myself back into that field as well. So this is all simultaneously happening.
No, that's good. I saw that, and I admire you, and I commend you for that.
Yeah, it's real interesting. I'm out here shooting B-roll footage for local programs on you know, our community colleges and things like that during the daytime and then politicking at night. So that's kind of the way my weeks are being spent now. It's real interesting. And plus, our illustrious governor who has, you know, he's made national news. Bill Maher has even done some routines about him on Real Time. And he's actually coming down to the station in 2 weeks. I'm going to be literally running the teleprompter while he does Carolina Business Review, which is a local show that we produce here. So I thought about, you know, switching out his words and putting something in there comical for him to say. And maybe
I'm starting that on a freelance gig, learning teleprompting. And I'm not, but if you want me to, I will come down. I'd be more than happy to take the blame for you and switch out the words completely and like put out the like something from Animal House for him to read.
Well, he deserves it. I'll tell you, he's really let me, if I can,
before we get, and we have to get, because I know you have a lot of good things to talk about on home video. But this guy is not. I mean, North Carolina is supposed to be the if you look at it outside of politics, it's a very progressive state. It is something that wants to move forward. But unfortunately, politically, though, it is something you do feel like you're being sent back to before Reconstruction, in many ways.
Yeah, it's really bad. We're the laughing butt, the butt of all the jokes, you know. And I understand why. I get it. But hopefully, this election season is going to change all that. I'm hoping, and that people are gonna. I think people have awakened, and the governor's seat is not up this election, unfortunately. But there are a lot of. Senatorial seats and things like that could change the direction.
Right,
so
right.
We're hoping, and I, our 10th congressional congressman, who's the candidate, I should say, I just DJ'd his fundraiser last night, so I'm helping out some of the other candidates when I get a chance too. So
right now,
I do that too. Wow. So anyway.
Okay. Anytime you feel bad about living in North Carolina, just think to yourself, there's always Mississippi. So there's always something worse out there. Yeah. All right. We're covering September Blu-ray releases, correct, Adam?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. And what I'm going to do again is I'm going to save up all the recent releases, like the ones that have been in theaters in the last 6 months. We'll do those at the end because I know you guys have covered most of those already, and so that way we can get to the meat of things that maybe you guys haven't talked about or haven't talked about in a long time. So
okay, it's just the three of us tonight, Adam.
Okay,
Dean couldn't make it to this episode, so.
That'll work. Is he in New York?
I don't want you to think that Dean's ignoring you because he's very silent. He's silent because he's not on the phone.
Okay. Well, I was going to give him a hard time about that, but okay, good. That explains all.
No. That's one less thing you have to worry about. So
if Dean were on the phone, you would know it. I mean, he would make it very. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, we'll now some of these have. We'll start with September 2nd, which was last Tuesday, of course. And Universal issued the 1979 version of Dracula with Frank Langella.
The John Badham, yeah.
Yeah, John Badham, yes. I actually like this version of Dracula. I don't know about you guys. It was very critically lambasted when it came out for the most part. People just did not respond to it. And I think it has some nice atmospheric touches.
Oh, yeah. He's a good Dracula. He's a good Dracula, let's be honest.
Yeah.
He's a good...
And then he played Dracula again when he was in that Nixon movie.
So that's right.
Good point.
You were waiting all day to get that in.
I was waiting for it. You know what, though? The first time we had Badham on the show, and he's been on the show maybe four times, we were preparing for Horror Week. And so before we introduced him, we were talking about the guests that we had lined up for Horror Week. And so the first thing he said when he got online, he was like, you know, I've done a horror movie. I did Dracula. And we're like, of course you did. Of course you did Dracula. And I agree. Vangela's great. Kate Nelligan is the woman, right?
Oh, yeah. I like her a lot, too. Yeah, I think she's perfectly cast in that, in my opinion. And you got Donald Pleasance there, I mean, in supporting...
Laurence Olivier.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great cast. You can't deny this movie. I mean, there's no way. I'm sorry.
And a great John Williams score, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot to admire about it. And I don't know, I just never figured out why it got such a bad reputation. But, who knows?
Well, look, I mean, the Coppola one, you know, a lot of people ragged on that, too. And that's a good one, too. And, I'm looking forward. I know you guys are going to laugh at me. I'm looking forward to this new Dracula that comes out in October, Dracula Untold. That looks like an interesting revisit, too. But I haven't seen I never saw Dracula 2000, and, you know, if I go to my grave not seeing it, I'll be happy. But, you know, for the most part, I like the Langella and Gary Oldman Draculas a lot. I think they're very good movies. They're very good updates of the, I really do.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm, like I said, I'm a big A pretty big fan of that movie. Anyway, we'll move along, though. Universal is also issuing Casper, the 1995 version of Casper. Don't know if there are any thoughts on that, or maybe we should just move along.
Move along, please. Could you move along? Thank you.
We can definitely do that. We have Destroy All Monsters,
That's the greatest movie ever made. That's like the Ocean's 11 of Godzilla movies.
Yeah, that's they're all there. The gang's all there, so to
The
speak.
gang's all there, and it makes no sense. And it's—I mean, as I've said before on the show, Toho was all about destroying continuity after every two films. So you got it right there.
Oh yeah. But they're for. I guess they're doing this to tie in with the release of the new Godzilla, because they've also got Godzilla versus Megalon that's coming out, which.
Oh, that movie sucks. No, no amount of drugs can make that movie good. That movie just sucks raw. No drugs can make that movie good.
I totally agree. Yeah, it was
But
so
the new
bad.
Godzilla. Well, let me ask you this, though.
Yeah.
I need to ask you this about the new Godzilla, because I might actually buy this, or I hope someone buys it for me. But is there anything on that Blu-ray that will be new on the new Godzilla one?
Oh, the May, the Godzilla from May of this previous
Yeah.
year. I don't know about the specs on that. I haven't seen what the details are on the extras, so I'm not sure. I really can't say, but I do know it's getting issued, and I'm sure they'll be the. You know, they're getting really flimsy with these behind the scenes things they used to have. It's really. I know what there was a big brouhaha about the Star Trek, the last Star Trek film, because you could only get the extras as an iTunes extra or something. You had to pay it. It didn't come standard with it like it used to, you know. So I'm assuming that there it's probably going to be close to bare bones or something. I don't know. I'm not sure, but anyway. But Godzilla versus Megalon was so bad. You know, that's the one with Jet Jaguar. Remember the one that I think he's like a robot or something. It's horrible, and they did. It
Oh,
was
it's
so bad.
wretched. Oh, it's bloody wretched. I mean, I remember
Well.
they showed that on NBC on Channel 4,
Yeah.
and I'm only like 6 or 7, and I even then I knew I needed to be high to watch this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's it I remember they did a Mystery Science Theater episode on it, and
That was
it's
better than the actual
that I was
movie.
gonna say, if you must see Godzilla versus Megalon, please just go ahead and get the Mystery Science Theater episode, and that's the way to go about it, I do believe. But anyway, also Universal is issuing Firestarter, the 1984,
You
and
know, are these bare bones
I
additions?
think they mostly are. Universal just they drag these things out with as few extras as they can, but they've been doing a pretty good job plumbing, and I do mean plumbing the vaults when you're talking about Firestarter, but
Well, what do you
or
think?
people.
What do you think? I was because I have this book. Every time I'm on the toilet, I pick it up and read it. So I've read the same passage like 2 dozen times about Firestarter. It's called Stephen King Frequently Asked Questions. So and originally John Carpenter was going to direct that, and it fell through. So he directed Christine instead. But then Dino picked up Firestarter and brought in Lewis Teague, I think, directed that one. And they said that the worst miscasting in the history of Stephen King movies is George C. Scott as the big Indian, Rainwater or whatever his name is in the movie. It's not an entirely successful movie, but it's not to the level of the worst Stephen King films, certainly,
No,
right?
no. I totally agree.
No, no.
I think it is, you know, there are some movies that are begging to be remade, and I think Firestarter is a terrific example of something that would do well to be remade, because the source material is there. I think there's a lot of stuff that's not included in this film version that is in the original novel. And it's just, if you got the property into the right hands, I think it could really be done well. But it's just a question of getting it into the right hands and getting in the financing, and I don't know. But I think people would go see it. I think if you promoted it the right way, I think there's an audience for that. Personally,
Who
I
would you
don't know.
get to play the main character? And don't say Chloe Moretz. That's no, don't say Chloe.
Yeah, Chloe Grace Moretz. Gosh, Ariel Grande. There we go.
All right, now I go see. I'll be there tomorrow. I'll go buy my tickets tomorrow.
Yeah, Firestarter is interesting, and I think it could be remade. But they did do a sequel to it, I think. And then they tried to do
video.
A TV. Sci-Fi Channel tried to do a TV series out of it too.
Yeah, actually, I think you're right.
And the TV series, I think they cast Malcolm McDowell in the George C. Scott role. So an even more awful casting choice for a tall Indian. So anyway, yep. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, we've got also coming out, we have a remastered version of Rain Man. I'm assuming that might have some new extras on that. Don't know for sure, but there
25th anniversary.
Yeah, there
God,
is.
I feel old. I feel old.
Oh my gosh, I know. I can remember seeing it in the theater, and it just seems like yesterday. You're right, exactly. But speaking of Universal, they've got a couple other things here. They've got the original 1932 version of The Mummy, which was in their Universal Monsters box set, and it's a standalone release. They're doing also The People Under the Stairs, Wes Craven's.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
I remember nothing about that movie. I remember nothing really about any 90s, outside of Scream, any 90s output from Wes Craven. That or Shocker or all of that stuff.
Oh, I don't remember anything about any of those. You're right. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, I don't know. The People Under the Stairs didn't really do a whole lot for me. I saw it in a theater when it came out, and I just never returned to it because it just wasn't for me. You have the a couple other Universal titles here: The Return, The Watcher, and the 1941 version of The Wolfman. And
The Watcher, the Keanu Reeves movie, The Watcher.
Oh gosh,
I think it's Keanu Reeves and James Spader, isn't it?
The Watcher. That movie's. Oh my God!
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
But why? Who? I mean, someone saved that? That wasn't deleted from someone's hard drive.
Keanu Reeves plays the serial killer in it.
Yeah, yeah. It's an awful movie. Oh my God.
Good shit. Well, I'm glad they're finally releasing that on Blu-ray.
Oh, I will sleep so much better. Would someone please get me a prescription of Xanax, please? Thank you.
And isn't it ironic that a movie that nobody watched is called The Watcher? Isn't that ironic? That's funny.
Oh, I know. It's let's see. Oh, yeah, White Noise. That was the other one I was going to mention. Michael Keaton. Yeah, that's another Universal release.
That's another. And they made a sequel to that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they did. God. Yeah. I think that was
You know the other thing about Firestarter? One of the things that I'm so sorry. I know this was so 5 minutes.
No, it's good. This is awesome.
But the other thing that makes it automatically dated, as much as it was cool at the time, is the Tangerine Dream score. It's like you listen to those synth scores, and they like date your movie just like that in an instant.
Yeah, exactly. Very good point.
I hope the Tangerine Dream or Vangelis will come back and score Blade Runner 2.
I do too. I mean, there's
I
some
won't
projects,
go see it.
Well, there's some projects where it works, but movies like that, I mean, there's just something about it that automatically dates it. I don't feel that way about Sorcerer and their score for that.
Right.
You know,
but Sorcerer.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm so sorry, Adam.
No. You're
it's
fine.
It's your show, Jamie. You can do whatever you want.
It is.
All right. That's true. Fuck you, Adam. I'm gonna.
Groovy.
I'm kidding.
Well, the way I look at it is, I'm just a springboard for some discussion. I hope so. If that's what we're leading to, that's all that matters. So.
No.
Yeah.
I love it when you come on. Let me just say it because it gives us a chance to talk about stuff that we don't focus on. We never focus on all these. You know, and you give us a forum to talk about so many diverse titles that never would have come up anyway. So that's great. Thank you.
Well, I said I wasn't going to talk about current things, but I will mention this before I forget it. And I'll be curious to know, this is not really movies, but it is movie related. Oliver Stone's Untold History of the United States is coming out on Blu-ray. And I found that to be somewhat interesting, pretty fascinating, actually. And they're issuing that. I was just wondering what you guys' thoughts on that. And I mean, you know, it's not really a movie per se, but
you know, it's not a movie, but it. All right, we watched the first couple of episodes. This was on Showtime, right?
Right.
I think. Okay, My oldest brother Michael is a historian, and now he's a professor at the Naval War College. We watched the first 3 or 4 episodes. We're very left-leaning, my family. The first couple episodes, he had a lot of problems with because it was very inaccurate. Even though that, you know, the historians that they used and everything, we couldn't watch it anymore because he got so upset with how inaccurate it was. But that's just one person's opinion. I would like to sit down and watch the whole series because I am curious.
Well, I'll tell you, I've watched most of them, and it's perplexing to me that the one filmmaker I would think would be the greatest at making political documentaries is Oliver Stone. But for some reason, I haven't liked a single documentary he's made, really. For some reason, all the fire and all the incendiary passions that he brings to his narrative films, especially the political ones, are completely dull to me in documentary form. It's weird.
Yeah, most of them. I found The Untold History of the United States to be, you know, because there's a lot of stuff there I did not know, or either I had not heard those theories or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the other stuff that he's done, like South of the Border, I didn't really take to that stuff, you know, the theatrically released ones or whatever. Those didn't really do much for me either. So, yeah, I kind of follow what you're saying there. Absolutely. But on an Oliver Stone note, we also have on September 9th, we're moving into that date now, Any Given Sunday, a director's cut. 15th anniversary.
15th anniversary, yeah. You know, at the time, Oliver Stone was one of my favorite filmmakers. And when I think about the movies that have really marked me the deepest, he really still is. Even though I don't think he's made a decent, I mean, Savages. He kind of like rebounded with Savages for me because that has some of the stuff that I love about him in it. Outside of that, I've been really unimpressed with him since the 90s. But so I was really looking forward to Any Given Sunday and you know, the lead actor that I love in Al Pacino. And I think Pacino's good and I think everybody's fine in it. When you have great actors working together, stop moving your camera all over the place so I can't enjoy a performance. I mean, you have James Woods. I've always said this about the movie. I've said it many times on the show probably. You have James Woods and Al Pacino in a scene together, the two most intense actors you could ever hope to match up, screaming at one another, and your camera's moving so much you can't enjoy their performance. I hate that.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And that it was about at the point when he did Any Given Sunday that I kind of lost interest, too. I think the last thing that he did that I really loved was U-Turn. I enjoyed that fairly well. And I did enjoy some elements of W. I thought that was kind of a return to form.
Yeah, you know, W has moments that are interesting, but not as a whole. It doesn't work, though.
And I'm sorry, another thing about Any Given Sunday, the whole thing opens with, like, you know, the hand on the ball and the Indian chant and all that kind of stuff.
Right,
like,
right.
Oliver Stone, not everything has to do with the Indians and the Indian spirit. And the, you know, every movie he did, he would infuse it with that stuff. I don't know, it gets tired. But at least I can say this. That's one of his only movies that isn't about mommy issues. Actually, if anything...
True.
Any Given Sunday is about daddy issues, isn't it? Yeah, because Al Pacino's father was a huge guy and he's not living up to his legacy that his father set, I think is one of the stories in it. But mommy issues permeate every other Oliver Stone movie, almost, that you can think of. From Alexander to, you know, just name a couple. And he has a real problem. W, I don't know. Go ahead. Good.
Well, yeah, that's a whole. Well, we could break off into a whole discussion about that.
W and Platoon have father. I mean, there are a lot of daddy issues in Platoon, and in W, there's a ton of daddy issues.
Well, I mean, really, Nixon. Think about it. I mean, at
the
title card is for Lewis Stone. I mean, how much more obvious could it be?
But he wrote a novel. Did any of you guys read the novel he wrote?
A Child's Night
Dream. I did not read it.
Yeah, I mean, it's all there. I mean, it's all there in that novel. I mean,
At some point, you got to say, Oliver, you're almost 70 years old. At a certain point, you should be over your mommy and daddy issues. I mean,
point. You're right there, Jamie. You're absolutely right. But I mean, he's obviously, if W is still an indication, he's not. Savage is. I agree with you. I think Savages is the best thing he's done in a long time.
I swear to God, Oliver Stone should have directed a big screen version of Oedipus Rex. He should have. That would have been perfect.
That's great. That's awesome. That's awesome. Oh, that's so funny. Well, there's an idea right there. Since his he didn't get to do the Martin Luther King biopic, so maybe that's so.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the next idea. So anyway, we have Godzilla 2000 again, another Godzilla title.
Well, that movie sucked. I saw that in the theater. That movie sucked too. Okay, no, we don't need that on any media.
Well, we also have a double feature of Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters All Out Attack, and Godzilla Against Mechagodzilla. These are the early 2000 films that were made in Japan.
Those two, I could see. But the first one is actually very good. But I have to say, I want to say something now as probably the foremost expert on this show of anyone. The new one, the one that Warner Brothers made, the one that Gareth Edwards, the films have never looked as good as this year, as this one movie. They've never physically, they've just never looked this good. I mean, this is gonna be the oddity, I guess, out of the whole series. They've never looked as good under Gareth Edwards, and regardless of what people think about the execution and everything, this is going to always be the gold standard. If you show these earlier films, while they're fun and they're silly and everything, you know, Gareth Edwards got it. I mean, I hate to say that, but I mean, he really is the one who understood, hey, you give me all this money, I'm going to make the most expensive Toho movie that Toho could never make. And that's what he got.
Well,
yeah.
And it also depends upon your definition of the appeal of the earlier Godzilla movies. I mean, was some of the appeal of those earlier movies that the effects were rudimentary? I mean, that you knew it was... I mean,
a man in a suit is the word.
Does the fact that this Godzilla is so hyper-realistic, does that take away from some of the appeal that we've always found in the Godzilla movies of old?
It you know, in one way it does, but in one sense, in another way, it's exactly what... If you look at the movie and then the complaints of the movie from people... You know, Godzilla has about as much screen time in this one as in the first one that everyone goes, not the one with Raymond Burr, but the original one. He has the same amount of screen time. It is a complete homage to Spielberg. There's no doubt about that. I mean, but that is, I do think what this new one did is the gold standard now. I really do. Although the first movie that Adam brings up, you know, Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, All Monsters Attack, I would have to say before Gareth Edwards, that's the gold standard.
Yeah, those movies were very enjoyable, I thought. And the special effects.
Yeah, but that one, because when we talk about, and I mentioned this on the show a couple months ago, the Godzilla movies were the first movies, the first franchise, where they were constantly rebooting. They were always rebooting. I mean, they really, they didn't care because no one outside of Japan cared, but they were always rebooting the series. And that one that you bring up, a complete change of mythology and everything from previous films. So... That is,
you know,
before Gareth
Edwards, else,
that's the gold standard.
You know what else this reminds me of? It reminds me of stuff like Corman, I'm sure, used to do. When there was a big movie and it was about to get released on a home entertainment format, Corman would always release a similarly named movie on the same day. So hopefully people would mistakenly pick up his...
Right.
instead of the one they wanted. And so all of this glut of Godzilla titles, I bet you there's going to be a lot of people that mistakenly pick these up and buy them, thinking that it's the new Godzilla.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably
right. That's a great point, Jamie. That's a very good point.
And if they get the ones that are being issued by Sony that we're just talking about, they could do worse, because those special effects in those films had actually evolved to the point where they were not bad. I thought they were...
No, you know, they were... Look, when... How do I say it? You know, in this country, it was Godzilla 1985, where they, you know, inserted, you know, and Raymond Burr's in that one, too. That was a big, big seismic shift in Toho's movie-making thing, because they really did up the ante in special effects. Before that, I mean, it was not, you know, you watch Terror of Mechagodzilla, you're like, oh my god, they're in Inoshira Honda's basement making the movie, and they're using his wife's wardrobe. I mean, you know, they really did, they tried, I have to give them credit, they really tried to really up the game in the late 80s and early 90s, and they did a very good job. And they were very honest. When they killed him off in 94 or 95, we've run out of ideas. We don't know what else to do.
You know, and I was...
I applaud them for that.
I am amazed by how much effects have matured over the years, in just in recent years, because I was watching Waterworld. I mean, just like, I was just watching like 3 minutes of Waterworld when it was on TV last night. This was 95. And it was an underwater scene. And we have become so jaded that I was, or I have anyway, I was watching that scene, and I was like, man, these effects are like really effecty. Like you definitely know you're watching an effect, and it would be so much more seamless if it were done today. But that's in that short amount of time, that's how jaded we become, that effects, you know, of course they're going to look, you know, seamless, because that's where the technology is now.
Yeah.
Great point.
And we're not amazed. How can we be amazed by anything anymore?
No, yeah. Yeah, that has gone, and it's not coming back. You're right. And I think that's...
Let me ask you this. Do you think we will be amazed in 2015 by the effects of the Avengers 2 or Star Wars Episode 7?
I think we'll admire the effects of the new Star Wars, mainly because they're going back old school, and I think we'll, you know, a part of our childhood will allow us to, I don't know. What
you don't think me tripping over the popcorn guys in the aisle? You don't think me tripping down the stairs of the stadium seating, that will be... Okay, never mind. But
well, I will say, once you've reached this plateau where you can't take it any farther, the only way to go is back. And so to feel fresh again, I think J.J. Abrams is doing the right thing by going old school with the effects again.
Oh, he's totally... I agree 100%.
Well, on the Godzilla front, I will say one more thing. They're also issuing a Rebirth of Mothra trilogy on Sony. So these are the new...
Oh, my
Mothra
God!
Films. I'm not kidding.
Oh, my
while
God,
on,
really?
While we're on it. Yes, I wish that were not true, but they are. So not only are they picking everybody's pocket for the Godzilla films, but also the Mothra films, too. So anyway, but moving right along.
I don't even think Andy Sedaris could say that.
That's too many Godzilla movies. That's just...
No, that's wretched.
Is.
That's bloody wretched.
Well,
those movies sucked the first time around. I mean,
Well, I haven't seen any of the new batch of Mothra films, so
you don't want to.
Yeah, my schedule has...
You've got to run for the... You got to run for... You know, you're doing politics. I mean, that will... the Mothra will seem like innocence compared. No, you can't.
I wonder if when Jurassic Park was released on DVD, if people mistakenly picked up the Whoopi Goldberg movie T-Rex.
I did. I know I did.
Damn it.
Great.
I've been fooled again.
God damn you.
Oh, goodness. Well, we will get on to something besides Godzilla for a change.
Thank God.
I know I told you guys that Kino is doing a great job of issuing some of the MGM titles, which in November they're going to be issuing The Long Goodbye officially. by the way, but that's a couple of months out. But this month they've got some really good titles. They've got A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, and this is one of my favorites. I think this is a great 70s, Across 110th Street. I love
it. Oh, that's a good one, too. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that. And I was always told that was one of Elvis Presley's infamously favorite films as well. So for some strange reason, he was attracted to that film, and he kept a print of it in his screening room. I read that in one of his bios.
It has to be. I guess that's the movie that the song was written for, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's also a great music cue in Jackie Brown. I mean,
awesome. Yeah.
When he closes the movie on that music cue, I love that song.
Oh, yes.
I really love it.
I do too, and I wasn't really familiar with the song or the film until I saw Jackie Brown. I went back and investigated it, and I saw it, and I said, boy, I've struck gold with this one. It's great because
it's
gritty
awesome
early
film.
70s. Oh, yeah, and Anthony Quinn plays a hothead in that. You know,
yeah.
He has these bursts of outbursts of his temper every 2 seconds in the film, and it's just great. I love it. But anyway, it is. It makes me want to go back and watch it right now that we're talking about it. Another one that Kino's going to be issuing is Cotton Comes to Harlem. They're going to be putting that.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a great
movie.
Yeah,
that's pretty good too. Yeah. And let's see, Graduation Day is being issued by a company called Vinegar Syndrome. So that's one of those early 80s ripoffs of Halloween, of course.
Isn't that like a disease someone catches when they use a bad douche? What does that mean?
Yeah, what is that?
You don't want your company to sound like you just used a bad douche. I'm just saying.
Let's see. Juggernaut is another Kino release. They're putting.
Oh my God. Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's. It's been a while since I've seen that, but that might be giving me an opportunity to revisit it. Kingpin, from what is that? 96, I believe, with Woody Harrelson and Bill Murray. Fairly Brothers. That's apparent.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Yeah, I don't know why Paramount has the rights to this, because it was a MGM UA film. It's kind of strange, but they're issuing it. Lemony Snicket, Series of Unfortunate Events, is Warner Brothers is putting that one out. And
yeah, that never really – I always thought that would be a huge franchise for them, but it never went anywhere.
Yeah, they never tried to bring any of the other books to life. Cinematically, so I don't know. I guess it just didn't do what they thought. But you got a Prom Night special edition from Synapse. It's the 1980 version. Thank goodness.
I keep seeing screen grabs from that because it's a 2K restoration, and the screen grab that they keep showing, I guess because this is the way you sell it, is Jamie Lee Curtis showing a tremendous amount of cleavage. Look how cleaned up we are. Look at this cleavage. Doesn't it look great? Don't you want to buy this?
That's a great selling point. You got to give it to them.
Well, yeah, if it were anyone except Jamie Lee Curtis, I have nothing against
Jamie.
She's fine. She's fine.
That's the...
But let's be honest. She was a bit mannish in the day. I mean, she's one of the few women that actually, the older she got, the more feminine she became.
You're right. You're right.
No, that's a good point, Jamie. That's a very good point.
There was always that rumor going around that she was a hermaphrodite and she had to
Oh, God, and you brought it up, not me. Thank God someone else brought it up and not me. Okay.
I'm not saying I believe it or anything, but she had to.
No, I don't believe it either.
She had to address that rumor. It was so strong at one point. I remember that. She made an actual comment on it. But
well, that's what True Lies is really about. Let me tell you.
good one. Okay, we have Pumpkinhead and Pumpkinhead 2, Bloodwing, Scream Factory is seeing fit to issue those. So just in case.
My friend Rick loves Pumpkinhead. He's always like, Pumpkinhead is actually a really strong little horror movie. Is it? I've never seen it.
It's fairly good, yeah. I wouldn't say it's great.
The second one is Roger Clinton, right? Roger Clinton's in the second one, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. Yeah, that was his acting claim to fame. But yeah, Pumpkinhead, though, Stan Winston, you know, directed, so...
And
Lance Henriksen is in it?
That's right, that's right, yeah. Okay. And it was held up in rights limbo for, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or something, because... I think they filmed it, and maybe it was one of those Dealer Innes Entertainment Group deals that or maybe it was Orion. I can't remember. The studio folded, and then it sat there for 3 or 4 years before they finally got it distributed. It was literally on the shelf. These days, it would have gone straight to video, and you wouldn't have had that issue. But anyway, speaking of Oliver Stone, and I overlooked this one, but it's coming out on the same day, Seizure, his 1974 film.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, so they're really, you can get a complete
Seizure.
Oliver Stone, I guess, if you really, if you want to be an Oliver Stone completist, you can go all the way from Seizure to The Untold History of the United States. Anyway, they have the, go ahead.
But that was The Hand is still not available.
That is true, yep, Hand is missing. It's missing. So.
The hand is missing.
Okay, The Addams Family. Warner Brothers is issuing that. Any thoughts? The 19, what is that, 91,
no, just,
I think.
Oh, those both movies. I like, and I like the sequel a lot, too. I mean, I like both of those movies a lot.
Was that Barry Sonnenfeld's first movie as a director?
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
And who could forget, I wonder as an extra, if they're going to be issuing the infamous...
MC
Adam
Hammer.
Groove music video, yeah, by MC Hammer. So one that'll turn up in the high.
They do what they want to do, play what they want. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yep, yep. I remember it well. Also,
whatever happened to him?
That's a good question. That's a good subject for a documentary. What happened to MC Hammer?
He went out with parachute pants. I mean, they both kind of scare at the same time.
Well, I remember when he did an ill-advised career makeover as a gangster rapper. That was in the late 90s or early 2000s.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, my God, I do remember that.
That was pretty...
That was his Chris Gaines.
That's good, Jamie. That's
great
so good.
Great reference. Great reference. I wonder if anybody will know it but besides us, but anyway, that's good. Let's see. We have a Warner Archives is issuing The Great Race on Blu-ray, Blake Edwards film, which I think is still works pretty well.
God, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so there's that, and you have a 40th anniversary edition of Young Frankenstein. There you have it. That's September 9th. September 16th, we'll move on. You have Congo. I don't know that we need to say that much about Congo.
Jesus. Well, hang on. Was that did yeah. Crichton direct? Did Crichton direct that?
No, he didn't.
Who did?
He just wrote
that?
Frank Marshall. Didn't Frank Marshall direct that?
Right. It's Frank Marshall. Yep, that's exactly right. Yep. Yeah.
That was post Jurassic Park, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was in the glut of movies. Like Mighty Joe Young and that kind of thing, where they're trying to animate apes and stuff.
They're trying to also just cash in on Crichton, though. They're trying to, you know, with that and Spear, and you know, they're trying to go through everything that they hadn't already adapted, and it turned out to be not so good.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine that there's a huge audience just clamoring to get their hands on that Blu-ray, but who am I to judge? Eraserhead. Criterion is giving Eraserhead the deluxe treatment. So
I would actually say this is the big release for film fans this season.
Probably so. Yeah, it's right up there. Absolutely. Yeah, it's chock full of all kinds of stuff that you would expect on a Criterion issue. So and I'm sure.
I mean, somebody. My good friend and our frequent listener, Patrick, he emailed me a review from like Blu-ray Digest or something, a review of All That Jazz, the Criterion that just came out.
Mm.
And he said it was the only review he's ever read from them where across the board in every category, it was the highest possible rating of 5.
Wow.
Apparently that's an immaculate release.
I haven't got my hands on that yet, and that's on my to-do list. It hasn't happened yet, but I'm definitely.
I do have the porno version, All That Jizz, and I think that's clearly.
I was in there.
Inspired by Fosse, like all the way.
Did it get the deluxe treatment? That's what we want to know. So
truly, it's a 4K restoration of that film.
Right. Oh goodness.
And Ben Vereen is in it. It surprised the hell out of me all of a sudden.
Times are tough for Ben Vereen. You got to take whatever you can get. So it's. Oh goodness. Let's see. We've got two disasters films from the, and they may just be disasters, I don't know, from the late 70s. I remember them well, seeing them on ABC television. I remember seeing them in the network slots. Avalanche and Meteor.
Meteor is a classic. I don't know about Avalanche, but Meteor is a classic.
Well, I was going to make, it's funny because Meteor actually uses stock footage from Avalanche. There's a scene where the meteor crashes into the Swiss Alps. And isn't Sean Connery in that movie
Sean Connery, Brian Keith, Martin Landau. You got an all-star cast there. Natalie Wood, you got an all-star cast in Meteor.
Yeah, Ron Dean directed the guy that made Poseidon Adventure, the 72 version, same director, so.
Wow. I just mentioned Brian Keith. He's mentioned in the first episode of Tinseltown Tragedies. Because Peg and Whistle, the girl that jumped off the Hollywood sign, she was married for a short time to Robert Keith. Their marriage dissolved. So Robert Keith's wife, Peg, ex-wife Peg, killed herself. Then Robert Keith's son, Brian, killed himself. And he only killed himself 2 months after his own daughter killed herself. So suicide marked that entire family throughout history.
Right, yeah.
Amazing.
Terrible. Yeah.
I'm sorry I brought us down like that.
You're doing a good job.
Well, what about... what about Che from the Steven Soderbergh film?
That's an interesting, that's a fascinating movie, but the one, do you think that's the definitive biography of Che Guevara?
It's probably as good as we're going to get.
I think so, too. I mean...
It's not a subject that cries out for any better treat, any bigger...
I think that Benicio del Toro, being a superb actor, I do think that is as good as we are going to get as Che. I really do, for many, many years.
By the way, I hear that Benicio del Toro as Pablo Escobar is one of his best roles. I hear it's a good movie, the one that's about to come
out. I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that at all.
I can't wait to see that. It's going to be awesome.
He is a fascinating actor. He's riveting in so much that he does. And I was thinking about this the other day, and I was thinking, who is the most interesting actor that we have? And I was watching Walk the Line on cable yesterday, and I was thinking, thank God for Joaquin Phoenix, because I think he holds that title. He is the most interesting presence in movies today.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that...
No, I agree with you. There's that, and then there's his performance in The Master, which I just think is so otherworldly.
Even when he does standard melodrama like Two Lovers, it's fascinating to watch. We own the night. I think you know what it is, and it's really in The Master. There's this combination of sweetness and danger. And you don't know which side he's going to fall on. It's very unpredictable, but he has both.
Absolutely.
He's great.
Yeah, I totally agree. I can't wait to see the new Paul Thomas Anderson film with him. It's exciting.
Oh, God, I know. We need it right now.
Oh, you said that right. Yeah. Believe you me, when I have to go see at least one to two films every week, and there's absolutely nothing there. Yeah, this is. I totally agree. But I'm digressing. Dreamcatcher, Warner Brothers, Lawrence Kasdan. There's not really much to say about that.
It's a completely lunatic movie. So weird. Yeah. And I know why it went to Lawrence Kasdan, because he probably looked at it and thought, hey, this is like an ensemble movie like I'm used to making, and at the same time I'll be pushing myself because it's a kind of a horror thriller. And man, that movie's just out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the novel didn't get all that, the reviews weren't great on it either. It was Stephen King at that period where he was coming out of his post accident when he was,
Right, yeah.
You know, so he was, I don't think he was like firing on all cylinders, literally.
Isn't there a shit monster in that movie?
That is, it is all about shit monsters in that movie.
I can't remember.
It's like the serious version of Dogma. I mean, there's actually a...
Yeah.
What Psycho did for the shower, Dreamcatcher wanted to do for the toilet, and I'm dead serious.
No, you are, you're right, though. You're right.
Oh, man. Let's see. Well, Twilight Time is putting out La Bamba, so that's in a limited edition of 3,000 units, and they're also issuing, here's another Oliver Stone, guys, Salvador.
That's his best movie.
Yeah, they're putting that one out. That's only 3,000 discs, and once they're gone, they're gone, so it's short.
That's good. I'm glad they're coming out with that.
Yeah, me too.
I remember that whole period. I remember when La Bamba came out. I remember going to see it. And it was around that same period that I remember going to see stuff like RoboCop and Secret of My Success.
Mm-hmm.
It was that whole season there with those movies. It was such a fun time being young. Go ahead, Adam. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm with you. We're all in the same age group, so we remember.
Yeah, I mean
that's the one thing we can share.
I go commit suicide right now?
I'm too curious about what's going to happen next, so can't do
but
that.
But La Bamba is actually, I mean, it's not a bad movie at all. It's really redeemed by its performances.
Yeah.
But actually watching Walk the Line the other night, I was thinking, well, this is a really good biopic, but those are so hard to do well, especially a story like Ritchie Valens that ends like, countless popular music star stories ended around that time in a plane crash. Every single great artist that we've had, it seems at times, died in a plane crash. Ritchie Valens and Jim Croce and everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Very true. We got Ghostbusters 1 and 2. They're getting the 4K remastering, I guess, because of the 30th anniversary. And of course, Ghostbusters is in theaters this weekend too. So. And then you got Short Eyes. Do you remember that? You guys remember that? The prison drama that had, I think, Freddie Fender is in that movie. Bruce Davison. It's pretty brutal. it's one of the more brutal prison films I've seen. But that's the only acting gig I can think of where Freddie Fender appears as a. I think he's an inmate in the movie. But anyway. Silent Night, Deadly Night, the 30th anniversary edition of that.
I get a kick out of that movie. I laugh at that movie. I get a big kick out of that. I watched that a couple of years ago, and I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it definitely has some, there's definitely some humor value there for sure.
Silent Night, Deadly Night. It was Jack Frost. It was the horror movie Jack Frost.
The whole thing is a comedy unintentionally, if you ask me. But Silent Night, Deadly Night actually has some. It's kind of creepy at the beginning, and then it just kind of gets silly as it goes on. But it caused a big stir. They banned it in so many states because it was they were afraid that the kids were going to be terrified of Santa Claus because he was going around lopping people's heads off with axes and.
It's a war on Christmas and all,
all of that stuff, yep. Anyway, Dogs of War.
I love that movie.
Yep, that's decades since I've seen it. But it is
Chris Walken, right?
Issuing it. That's right, yep. Twilight Time, limited to 3,000 pieces, but they're going to be issuing that, as well as The Killer Elite, Sam Peckinpah.
Oh, goodness, wow.
That's a good one, too. That's a great one.
Yeah, and
towards the end of his life, Sam Peckinpah, I keep going back to the book I read on the toilet, but towards the end of his life, Sam Peckinpah was dead set on directing a Stephen King original screenplay. And Stephen King always said it was the best thing he ever wrote, and Peckinpah was perfect for it, but it never got off the ground, and then Peckinpah died.
Man, what a loss. That would have been great to see the Peckinpah King collaboration. Oh, let's see. Great Train Robbery. Well, now, you're talking about Michael Crichton directing films. Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. And the Nutty Professor 50th Anniversary Edition. And this one we talked about last month, and for some reason they moved it up a month. The Party is,
Oh, they pushed it back to this month?
Yeah, they put, I can't imagine why, but anyway, and then the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 40th Anniversary, of course, I know you guys discussed that.
Yes!
Yeah.
That's my number one. I gotta get it.
Yeah, I want to get that one too. Absolutely.
Me too.
Well, September 23rd, we have the Halloween Complete Collection. Somehow they've gotten the rights. You know, they're in so many different hands, and they've licensed them all and put them all in one place. So there's this huge, this humongous box set with all of the Halloween films, and you know,
something like 10 discs. I think it's a collaboration between Scream Factory and Anchor Bay. I keep getting emails about it, but like every single one, and they even showed it. We posted on our Facebook page. There's this screenshot comparison between the old VHS version of a scene from Halloween 4 and the remastered Halloween 4. I think it's 4. After a while, they just all bled in together. I mean, for somebody to take that great loving care with Halloween 4, you know, they put their work into it.
Yeah, I guess that's a testament to their dedication. Absolutely. Well, we have and speaking of anthology boxes and such, we have an Exorcist Complete anthology from Warner Brothers. They're going to be issuing all of the Exorcist films. And
I would be interested. I would be interested in owning Exorcist 2, because really, really enjoy that movie. That is, talk about a lunatic movie. That's the definition of lunatic. That's such a great oddball movie.
Yeah, but it's a great looking film. Oh my God, the look of that film.
Yes.
Isn't it? It's Bill Fraker, I think, shot it. And
amazing looking.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I've heard for years, and I don't know if there's any truth to it or not. Maybe you guys know something about it. But there was I was reading on IMDb some reviews of it, and one guy on there claims that he saw a pre-release version of it where they invited the public, and it ran nearly 3 hours. And he said that version was amazing before it was trimmed down to the to like 116 minutes, I think, now. And
well, first of all, I will tell you that they did screen the movie, and 95% of the people in the theater walked out because it was not the first Exorcist. I mean, it was far removed from that, and they wanted that. So automatically, before that movie ever came out, because of those test screenings, it had disaster written all over it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, yeah, it's a loony movie, but an interesting loony movie, I would say. But
It is gorgeous, especially they're doing the whatever the telekinesis thing is, and they have those light bulbs that flash on and off, and it's just it's a movie of such eerie visual, you know, practical in camera eerie visual effects. It's amazing to look at. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Totally agreed. No, you're right on it. And
it opens with a locust. It opens with a camera on top of a locust flying towards somebody. It's amazing. Okay.
It's probably one of the most interesting failures of the last 40 years, I would say. I would definitely recommend people check it out if they have not seen it, for sure. And I think they're going to be issuing that separately too, so you don't have to just get the box. You can get it by itself as a standalone.
Well, that's great.
Which is good.
That's great because
Because
Exorcist is particularly guilty of releasing 50 different versions. If you're an Exorcist completist, I mean, how many of these damn copies do you got to buy of The Exorcist to get the latest version? It's just ridiculous.
Right. Well, there is a Saw box, the complete movie collection, but, you know, what are you going to say about that? I mean, they're all jumping on this thing where they're going to, you know, put all these films together in one big package. There's a Leprechaun one on September 30th, but I haven't gotten down that far, but I'll go ahead and just mention
it. Oh, God.
Yeah, so anyway, we'll move over to Criterion. They have Macbeth, this is the Roman Polanski 1970 They're going to be doing that one, and they're also
now that's interesting. Polanski's, I'm sorry, Polanski's Macbeth is interesting because that's the first movie he made post his wife's murder from the Manson family.
That's right.
So, and I remember them showing us that Macbeth in high school, and I was
I watched it,
and I was thinking, man, this is dark. And then I read up on it, and I realized that Polanski was in a dark freaking place when he made it.
Yeah, he was, and it shows. I mean, it's very representative of probably his state of mind at the time. It's probably the darkest version of Macbeth that I know of, and it's an interesting comparison with the Mel Gibson one, you know. So, anyway, if you wanted to compare it, I don't know, but
well, he did Hamlet. Did Mel Gibson do Macbeth?
Hamlet. That's right. No.
Yeah, Hamlet. Yeah.
I'm thinking of something else. No. I'm sorry. I'm wrong.
Ethan Hawke did. No, Ethan Hawke did Hamlet too. What's another Macbeth?
Yeah. Who I'm
did Olivier do Macbeth?
Yeah,
there hasn't
Olivier
been another Macbeth.
Yeah.
You know, I know Kenneth Branagh wanted to do Macbeth, but there hasn't been one yet.
That's what. Yeah. Okay. I'm confused. Anyway, I stand corrected. But The Innocents, we have Criterion. That's another one, and you have that one, which is a good. You know, one of the better fright films of that period, I think. Run Silent, Run Deep. That's another Kino release. That we're, and then we move to September 30th, the final Tuesday in the month. And we've got Ali, Fear Eats the Soul. That's Fassbender, of course.
Yeah, that's a great movie. Great movie.
Yeah. And we have the 55th anniversary Diamond Deluxe edition of Ben-Hur from Warner Brothers. And while we're on that subject, we'll go ahead and say that Warner Brothers is really trying to milk all of the dollars they can from consumers, because this day, September 30th, they have Gone with the Wind 75th anniversary edition, Gremlins 30th anniversary edition, Interview with the Vampire 20th anniversary edition, Natural Born Killers 20th anniversary edition, Green Mile 15th anniversary edition, and a... Let's see. It seems like there's one more. Nope. I think that's it. That covers it. But anyway, you get. Oh, and a Forrest Gump 20th anniversary. Yep. Forgot about that one. So, and did I say Gone with the Wind 75th? I think it's.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did. You did.
Anyway, yeah. So there you go. So anyway, you have Sordid Lives. You remember this movie with Olivia Newton-John from 2000? Or it's written by the guy that did Daddy's Dying, Who's Got the Wheel, or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
It's become kind of a cult classic, I think. They even have a short-lived series, I think, based on it or something. But that's coming. Let's see here. We have Los Angeles Plays Itself, which Dean has spoken highly of. And I did see it. I got around to seeing it about a month ago, and it really is good for anybody who's not seen it. It's phenomenal. I'm surprised they were able to get the rights to all these film clips, because there are a lot of them in there. But we also have the Once Upon a Time in America extended director's cut, the 30th anniversary, I guess, on that.
Oh,
too.
Good.
Well,
that's coming out.
Yeah, it is coming out.
Oh, good. Okay.
That's
yeah,
September
that's
30th?
Yes, September 30th. You also have, speaking of John Badham, you have Blue Thunder. That's on the way. And Killer Fish, starring Lee Majors and I do believe Karen Black, and then you have Krull, which was a staple
Krull
of cable television in our younger days.
Wow!
So
Krull. You know what? I will say, you're a big soundtrack collector.
Yeah.
There was a time when James Horner's Krull soundtrack was going for like $300 on eBay.
You're right.
So rare.
You're right. I remember that. I could never get my hands on one because I wanted to get one and duplicate it and then sell it, but I didn't get it. I didn't for myself duplicate it, save it to my collection. But yeah,
Krull.
that was a rarity.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Is Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone, is that out on Blu-ray yet?
I think it is. I hate to say it, but I do believe it is. Yeah. But that covers all of the catalog titles. And the newer stuff, we have Captain America the Winter Soldier. We have God's Pocket, one of the final Philip Seymour Hoffman performances, of course. Brick Mansions. let's see here, Willow Creek, the Bobcat Goldthwait, his latest film.
Oh, that didn't even make a theatrical. That didn't even go really full theatrical at all.
Yeah, I just recently caught up with that. That's pretty interesting, and it's as good as any of these other found footage films that are out there. I'm telling you, it really is. And the premise of the film, in case you don't know, is it's this guy and his girlfriend. They decide that they're going to camp out in the spot where Roger Patterson shot that Bigfoot.
You know, with so many found footage movies, I mean, is it interesting because it comes from Bobcat Goldthwait?
Yeah, it is, and it's trending on Rotten Tomatoes as it's the highest rated reviewed film that he's gotten. It's 89% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is interesting. Hmm. And there are some genuinely suspenseful sequences in it. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's the greatest film ever made, but it's definitely worth a look. It's definitely worth a look. It's short. It's an hour and 19 minutes. They get in, they get out, they do their business, and you know, it's an interesting little film. So,
let me ask you a question, guys.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. You know, I just God damn it, the subject matter it's close to home, but Eduardo Sanchez, who made the Blair Witch Project, has made a movie called Exist, which is about the exact same thing, Bigfoot. Has anyone seen the Sanchez film yet?
That one I haven't seen, no.
You know, I wish they would just send me, you know, Willow Creek and Exist. I'd be happy if someone would just say, Exist is supposed to be extraordinary. But
yeah,
Willow Creek is supposed to be excellent. Everyone who's seen it has said it's superb.
I'll have to seek it out. I haven't, but I did catch up with Willow Creek last week, and it is worth. Think Like a Man 2. We'll quickly move on to that. That's coming, and we have the and these are all, like I said, the recent theatricals that we have coming. We have the latest Transformers movie, The Age of Extinction.
Oh, that movie sucked balls.
Yeah, well, yeah. which of them didn't? But except for maybe the first.
No, one. But this one really did. As a filmmaker, Michael Bay, you have an unlimited budget. You can do whatever you want. How can you make a film that boring?
Well, I totally agree. But
did you hear what he's doing next?
Michael
Bay's doing next? Oh God, I posted it a while ago on our Twitter, and it's completely surprising what he's doing next. He's making, it's a documentary, and it's something like about, I don't know, I want to say like Lebanese coat makers, or and like something weird like that.
Wow.
And they turn into robots?
Yeah,
that could
something.
Definitely be interesting. Well, we will end on a high note because Universal is going to be issuing Chef, which I know you guys like that. I did too, and Jon Favreau's Chef. So that's on the 30th, and so with that, I think that's pretty much.
Okay, Chef is a good way to end this with. Yes, Chef. Thank God.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. So I think.
Okay,
that pretty much covers it.
Thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
After reviewing these 20 Godzilla titles that are coming out in September, I'm quite exhausted.